We're covering a lot of ground this evening with Dr. Barry Taff, a parapsychologist, talking about aliens and abductions, poltergeists and hauntings, things that intervene or intercede in our lives with often unfortunate or even terrifying consequences. I guess one question would be, for the truly curious out there, people who want answers, can you open yourself up to these experiences? Can you invite these things into your life on purpose? Is that a good idea? We'll ask that, and then we'll go to the phones with your questions for my guest, Dr. Barry Taff, right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Our final hour with my guest, Dr. Barry Taff. Barry, you heard the tease, I think. Can you open yourselves up to this this kind of an experience? Can you say, look, I want to know about aliens. I want to do something to have them contact me. Or I'm really interested in ghosts. Can I just project my consciousness somehow and see if they'll contact me?
Well, the only aspect of parapsychology that I know for a fact people can be trained to perform in to a point through positive feedback and reinforcement is being psychic in terms of telepathic, clairvoyant, precognitive. We use methods at UCLA. We were in groups for many years, research groups that had extraordinary good results. And we were visited by the CIA, from DARPA, Office of Naval Intelligence, Defense Intelligence, and some of the early protocols and methodologies for remote viewing came out of what we were doing, and then it moved up to SRI. Some people were literal stars. They were like extremely, they responded real quick to the learning paradigm. Their abilities really developed quickly. The problem was, once you open that door, it's hard to close it. You open your front door, you get light, you get sound, you get odors, and it's not that easy to close it because your consciousness wants to know. And we had people who had real problems coping with it, and they stopped dealing with it. As far as opening yourself up to ghosts, we don't know what it is, except that there's a weird link between people and the environmental energies that seem to be triggering this. Even sleeping too close to a flock radio can affect people's behavior and sleep patterns and create anxiety in people. We don't understand it, but we know there's a link. As far as the UFO stuff, as I said, we had a case, oh God, in the late 70s of a network executive of Los Angeles, and poltergeist activity. He and his wife, I believe them because the sincerity of the people, they were real normal, grounded people. We didn't have any experiences, but about a year or so later, they were taking a trip up north, driving in California, and they saw what they thought was a plane about to crash. So they followed the light. They came around the bend, and they see a UFO on the ground, little occupants, and they saw bright light being pulsed at them, and they blacked out. And they woke up hours later on the freeway, and they have no idea how they got there. Whatever happened, and the evidence is strong, it might have been an abduction. It destroyed their lives. They remembered little pieces of it. Their tension, they became irritable, anxious, kind of irascible, bitter, hostile, post-traumatic stress disorder. This is not what I would recommend for anyone because it seems, who do you talk to about it? People think you're crazy. People think you're mentally ill. You're psychotic. You want attention. You're going to get famous and become rich from this stuff. But at what cost? It's like imagine waking up tomorrow and being superhuman. You have X-ray vision, and you can't control it, or heat vision. You know, some guy, he stares at a gorgeous girl, her clothes catch on fire. You open the door with too much strength, the door comes off in your hand. I, growing up, got in a lot of trouble because my being a medical intuitive. If I had a dollar for every person I've scared to death or bored to death, I'd be a multimillionaire. It's unbelievable. This is not fun when you're at the mercy of it. Even if you can control it, it's a game. One of my newest colleagues is a man by the name of Jack Rourke. He's a very gifted psychic. I've never worked with a psychic ever prior to him because he's a grounded, articulate, intelligent man, looks like Superman. We're very similar. He's also a medical intuitive. And what's amazing is that when he's had these experiences with girlfriends, they don't have the best response because it unnerves people. An example with me, 1973, I didn't mention this in the book. I met this gorgeous girl in the lab. We started dating. Everything was fine. And we're talking once, and I said, oh, excuse me, you have a tumor here on your left breast. And I pointed to it. She goes, what are you talking about? I said, look. She goes, what do you mean, look? I said, it's in your breast. Don't worry, it's benign. How do you know? I didn't see any calcium around it. She thought I was nuts. About a month and a half, she started a new job. They gave her a medical workup. They found it, did a biopsy. It was benign. It was exactly where I said it was. The relationship ended there and then.
Yeah, I could see that that would they would be taken very personally.
And she basically said, I feel like a piece of glass around you. I can't work a normal life and then come home and be with someone like you. The last thing we did together, another indicator of how disruptive these types of things can be in people's lives, I took her to see the premiere of The Exorcist here in Los Angeles. So, you know, she knew a little bit about it. And during the first act where Linda Blair is being bounced around the bed in the home, it was dead quiet in the show, and I blurted out to her, not knowing it was so loud, oh, I've seen a bed do that in a house in Hollywood. And at that point, from the front of the theater, I heard a voice yelling, that's got to be Barry Taff. and she went, I don't believe this is happening. She was traumatized. She was, the whole thing upset her. She didn't sleep for a week. How could this film not bother you? It's a movie. I go, it's a movie. And then the thing with the tumor in the breast and, no, that's that.
Let me ask this. What do you think about the use of psychedelic substances along the lines of Terrence McKenna to open yourselves up to doors of perception, other realities?
You know, all that I know, okay, the main problem in perceiving this information is signal-to-noise ratio. For everything we pick up, there's a lot of noise, a lot of chaos in it. We're trying to get rid of the noise and get better signal. So, in a small percent of the population, psychotropic drugs might open up levels of consciousness. It may also produce very dangerous biological effects, which may not be correctable. It'd be like, oh, let's see if I can fly with these wings I made. I may die, but we'll see if I can try. There are ways to enhance one's perceptual abilities. This is what we were doing at UCLA early on, and it worked in some people. A very small percentage were stars. They were, like, amazing. They responded quickly. Others were the most stubborn, rigid, inflexible people. They were the MDs, the physicists, the engineers, the chemists, because they were thought to think in a very linear way. And most people were somewhere in the middle, up and down. But again, once this aspect is open, the need to know never ceases, and it can be very disorienting to people. It's just not something I recommend unless you're really grounded, because for most people, this could be very disturbing.
Let's take some calls. Our international line, Angie in Ontario. Hi, Angie. How you doing?
Hi, guys. I've had the nuts label put on me. I had two very good friends that were both psychics. I believe that we do have free choice, and that, you know, there's good and there's evil. And I think this information comes in into us. And one psychic did tell me that this was like a battle between good and evil. And it's funny that you just mentioned clock radios and people not sleeping, because where I live, we have the smart grid here, mm-hmm. and I've heard high-frequency noise come out of a clock radio, as well as a TV, and anything, actually, that has a speaker coming out of it. But I wanted to ask why, when you first started, you said that you couldn't speak about what you were doing, and wasn't Obama's first things that he did was sign a disclosure bill? So why is nobody disclosing anything?
Thanks for the questions. First of all, the work I did for the intelligence community law enforcement, military, dealt with things they didn't want the public to know about, and I can understand why. The problem is this. When the remote viewing work was going on and then it ended, the intelligence community hired some professional debunkers to reevaluate the statistics. And they, oh, nothing happened. It was all a joke. We were wrong. The reason they did that is to make sure our enemies don't use what we know against us. Because if we can do it, or theoretically our enemies can do it. If it worked all the time, we wouldn't call it phenomena. The fact that it works some of the time and not other times suggests that we're ignorant about an aspect of the world in which we live. And what was the second question?
She asked about disclosure, and I think disclosure. The answer would, yeah. Well, go ahead.
Okay, let's deal with ufology. In the book, I discuss this at length, that I believe that we know that the human race was engineered by another race of beings as opposed to God. Okay, well, who then created those beings, and who created those beings? But disclosing this type of information, oh, well, the Earth's been visited for thousands of years by different races from other star systems, and they've toyed with us. They're still doing it. Maybe there's been contact at a very covert level, like a government, when the government, if that was disclosed, the impact could be devastating. It could, in my opinion, it could screw up domestic tranquility. If we lose faith in our government, which we might have done to a point, because we can't trust government officials throughout the world in many respects, because we're lied to all the time about everything, and then the ultimate lie, we have an inconceivable past and unimaginable future, it could trigger the Third World War. We already have enough people who want to go to war because they don't think like we do, or we don't think like they do. Oh, I'm this, you're that. And the bottom line, we're all human. The short term, the results of disclosure could be devastating, in my opinion. Long term would be good, but it would be the most destabilizing information ever given to the socioeconomic infrastructure of our culture. That's my opinion.
Thank you, Angie. Appreciate that. East of the Rockies, Mike in South Carolina. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm, not real great with names and everything, even though I listen to y'all station reputedly for the last 10, 15 years now.
I'm George, and you're talking to Barry. George Barry. And Barry.
Yes.
Barry, I had something happen to me that happened in 2006. I lived at the coast of South Carolina, and I lived on a barrier island. So we didn't have as many lights and everything in the sky, so we would, anytime we'd find a shootings, a time that they had a meteor shower or whatever, most of the time the rest of the country couldn't see it, but 9 times out of 10 we could see it at the coast. So I went out with my telescope and a friend of mine, and so I like to say I went by myself, so it was, somebody else that actually saw what I came in contact with. But I'm a person that's real bad and have been told by many of things in my past, well, not things, but people, that it's not a good idea to take a 1,000,000 candle watt spotlight and start blinking at some of these weird looking things that some people want to call them satellites out 26 miles out in space. The satellite doesn't spin around, and it doesn't have all kind of strobe lights around the center part of it. Well, anyway, make a long story short, I was looking at this really big planet or whatever through a really good Celestron telescope, which is, they're not something you can go buy at Walmart. But anyway, it was a programmable telescope and everything where you can program everything into it. But what I was looking at was not a planet, was not something military or anything else. This thing just suddenly appeared in the sky. Some people, if you've ever talked to any people about UFOs, some of them say it looks like the moon, or something looks similar to the moon. I've had people tell me that they were looking at the moon. Well, I watch what goes on with the moon because I'm a Sabbath keeper. I'm not like the rest of the people out there that are scared to say anything. But the reason I hadn't called on to that show in a long, long, long time is because I moved and I just kind of kept quiet about everything. But make an even long story short, what showed up when you're on a gravel road coming down the road, you can hear gravel crunching. Okay, so if something is coming a mile from down the road, you're going to hear it start coming down the road. Well, what came down the road? First I thought, maybe I'm just seeing something. I'm not a person on drugs. I'm not hooked up on any kind of medication, nothing. But it's like this. It was the vehicle that came down the road. back in the Vietnam time and different wars, the Jeeps would have, you know, military Jeeps would have a little slit in the made so the planes couldn't see the Jeeps when they was going into battle or trying to get somewhere at nighttime. That's the way the Jeeps were made. Well, this vehicle that showed up had triangles in the lights, so it gave it a very weird looking look. But the thing that I came in contact with that got out of it, I thought was a human. Every human being on the face of this earth has eyebrows. This thing didn't have eyebrows. It had no really facial look to it except the skin. You know, it didn't move like a human. And for it to suddenly appear, people talk about that their planes disappeared, boats disappeared, all this stuff disappeared, and nobody can ever find it. You know, and planes just don't suddenly disappear out of the sky without a trace left on the water. I mean, they're going to find an oil slick. They're going to find something. But it goes back for hundreds, maybe thousands of years. Anybody that believes that man built those pyramids over in Egypt.
Hey, wait, Mike, before you get into that, what happened with this thing with no eyebrows?
What happened with this thing, it had a 2-inch gash all the way around its neck, and what I saw in that gash was mechanical. It was not a human being. Now, they have androids in this country. There's a website that, you know, I could give to you, but I don't want everybody and their brother seeing it because I can get information off a computer. I'm not a computer hacker, but I know certain things to get into sites that most people can't get into.
I'll tell you what, hold on here, Mike. Let me get Dr. Taff to comment on what you've said so far, because we got about 2 minutes before we go to a break. Barry, what your general thoughts on the idea that maybe some of these visitors that are described as aliens are in fact androids or manufactured beings as opposed to living beings?
There was a great case in 1973 in Pascagoula, Mississippi, where these guys were fishing on a dock. And this vehicle came down, and this robotic creature came out and picked them up and abducted them. Very well-known case. There was another case in 1957 in Brazil, the Antonio Villas Boas case, where he was abducted right off his father's farm of a tractor, and he was abducted, taken in. This is a really famous, probably the first abduction case in modern time that we know of. And he was subjected to a female thing, subjected him, engaged in sex with him. It very odd case. You can find this. The event, Antonio Villas Boas, Brazil, 1957. Alexander the Great was on his quests of trips of conquest, was being harassed by flying burning shields. No humans were flying in those days, and they didn't have burning shields flying around. So what did he experience? What harassed him and his troops? No one knows.
Well, I guess that, you know, what Mike is implying is that maybe that these, and I've heard it a lot of times in the UFO field, that it would make sense if they're ETs coming from other planets, that they are manufactured beings, that they're androids, that they're robots, as opposed to living, breathing humanoids.
Yeah, in the Pascagoula, Mississippi, the creatures sounded, the entities sounded like they were robotic. And also there was some evidence in the Boas case that some of the entities, maybe some robotic android nature. But, it wouldn't surprise me if the interstellar travel can't be done in real time.
Yep. All right. Hey, sorry to interrupt you there, Barry. Mike from South Carolina, thanks for that call. Appreciate it. We'll get back to the phones and get to as many of your questions as we can right after this on Coast to Coast AM. It is not too late, however, to ask questions of our guest, Dr. Barry Taff. The lines are full. We'll come back and get to as many of your questions as we can. I'd ask you to just be brief and get to the point so we can get to as many callers as we can. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. In Long Beach, you're on with Dr. Barry Taff.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because, Barry mentioned the fact that we have no free will. We just You know, if the future's already there, as the past is and the present is, actually it's all one. It's all here at the same time. But I think he's overlooking the fact that we can either go along, as most people do, and take things as they come and live that way, but also we have free will to pray to God or whatever we call God, our higher self or higher being. That changes the present and the future. And so, well, then how? What if you looked at it a week ago and it was one way? Well, after we say our prayers and the prayers are answered by God, then if we look at the future, we see it is a different way. And for anybody to get on the radio and tell people that there's no hope for us because it's all planned out or predestination, whatever you call it, is certainly not a very intelligent way of thinking.
Well, I don't think that's what he said, but go ahead, Barry. You can defend yourself.
All I'm saying is that the evidence strongly suggests that the information of the past and the future exists simultaneously. I didn't say, you know, we're destined to be doomed or anything like that. You shouldn't believe in God. I'm saying we're dealing with a reality far more complicated, far more vast, far more intricate than we could ever imagine. And all I'm doing is describing something based on what the evidence indicates. If the future's information didn't exist in some form, you could never see it. The same thing with the past, where it's a holographic space-time. Our brains are holographic. Our consciousness is holographic. Our bodies are holographic. All we got to do is lock in to access that bit of information. And whether we have free will or not, it doesn't matter. Because in the end, we're going to live the life we're going to live, and we don't know it until we get there. So if there is free will, we can't prove it. If there isn't free will, we can't prove that. It's an untestable hypothesis.
And that's not a very satisfying answer for you, DeVita, but it is what Dr. Taft believes. First-time caller, Eric in Queens, New York. Hi, Eric.
Yes, good morning, George and Barry. How you doing?
Fine, okay. How you doing?
I just want to ask you a question. Just out of curiosity, the Ghost Hunters show on Sci-Fi, do you think they will ever do a live broadcast of a seance or a Ouija board?
I only watched two episodes of the series. I watched the very first one when it premiered, which I wasn't too impressed with, and then I watched the one they did on a case I was involved with in Beverly Hills that I spoke of earlier this evening, and they kind of made a shambles of the case. They were given gold and they turned it to lead. It's kind of hard to do, but they did it. They made it seem like a joke. The whole point is trying to get something to encounter something firsthand when your cameras are running is extremely hard and time-consuming and costly. So my guess is that a lot of what you may see on these shows is scripted and fabricated because it's entertainment, and that's all it's ever been.
I would think that a live broadcast would be pretty risky, considering that the chances for success would be pretty limited.
Yeah, and George, that great book you wrote, you know, the more intense and scrutiny became with more people and more, you know, investigators and more instrumentation, the more things disappeared. It stopped working.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it. Wildcard line, David in Oklahoma. Good morning, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. This is a thrill and an honor. Thank you for having me on the air. Dr. Taft. In 1995, you were in Centrahoma, Oklahoma, as part of a television production called Put to the Test with host Dana Fleming,
yes.
Dealing with the McWethy House.
Yes.
And I have so many questions about you. You could do an entire show just about this case. I had talked to the family extensively. I've researched this case myself. They had as many as 12 different entities in their home.
Yes, I'm familiar with the case. We spent a week there, and nothing happened. It had all the earmarks of a poltergeist case as opposed to a haunting. It was all centered around Twyla. And
I did speak to Twyla also. What happened when you went to the cemetery and you asked the ghost if they wanted you to leave, give them a sign, and all the dogs began to howl in unison?
I mean, the dogs might have howled because they heard another animal nearby. There's a million things that get an animal to react. Some animals react to these things, others do not. The only thing that impressed me that we got on camera of interest was a couple lightning storms that came in. It was dead as a doornail. Things allegedly occurred before we arrived, and things occurred after we left, which is normal. If it happened the other way, I'd be shocked. Poltergeist cases are infamous for not performing for strangers because the agents are inhibited by the presence of people they don't know.
David seems to believe, Barry, that case had merit, though. So going into it, it looked like, in fact, he's right.
There were things going on for sure. But again, I didn't have it was hard really interviewing Twyla and the other people there because of the presence of all the crew. I think the psychodynamics of the family suggest it was certainly real, but its nature is what I question. Whether you're talking about dead people, discarnate intelligence, versus the product of a living psyche. Who knows? I didn't get a chance to do what I wanted to do. We were there for a specific goal, and I told them it was a dead-end case, and when we were there, nothing happened. So, what can you do?
David, anything else?
I guess you just weren't very impressed by that case then. Were over 120 witnesses by the time the production company had gotten there, and I just thought it was a fascinating case. I'm kind of disappointed to hear that you weren't more impressed.
Well, we were there for a week, and while we were there, bad pun, it was dead as a doornail. It was extremely quiet. Virtually nothing happened while we were there. Nothing. Other than an electrical storm, it was just, which is, again, this is the norm. After doing this work for 43 years, the norm is you go out, you do your interviews, and nothing happens.
Yeah, David, I don't think he's saying that it's an unimpressive case. I just think he's saying that during the week he was there that nothing happened, which is not out of the norm for investigations of this kind.
Yeah, if I had the instruments with me we have today, I should have been able to measure the environment better. A lot of it didn't exist back then. We didn't own them. And it would have been interesting to measure the environment, measure Twyla, measure her family members, and see what's going on. Had we been able to do so, I think we may have gotten some answers and gotten some, clarification on this.
What impressed me the most was the members of the Colgate Record Register who became involved in the case and witnessed things, and the Tupelo County Sheriff who witnessed things and himself said, I assure you, if you stay here long enough, you too will have an experience.
Yeah, my guess is if we stay there long enough, their inhibitions might go away and something may occur, but... it was difficult. The man directing it or producing it, I forgot. He was somewhat caustic and abrasive, and wasn't the easiest to live and work with at that time. And it was okay. He inhibited me, and I wasn't the focus of the case. So,
hey, David. David, thank you. Appreciate the input. Wayne in Fairbanks, Alaska. Good morning, Wayne.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I have a question for Barry. Actually, the first part is about the entity. I read the book many years ago, was pretty fascinated by it. And what I wanted to ask Barry about it was the part with the liquid hydrogen or liquid helium that was minus about 450 degrees
mm-hmm.
that you actually
yes.
froze the entity with, did that actually take place?
No. If you want to read a really precise description of what did not occur, you buy my book, Aliens Above, Ghosts Below, Explorations of the Unknown, from Cosmic Pantheon Press. And Chapter 2 is called The Real-Life Entity Case. It goes
okay.
into detail on everything, including the making of the movie and the overall evaluation that more than 30 years later.
Okay, and can I comment on one other thing?
Sure.
The Amityville Horror, I read someplace a few years after that came out that it was a hoax, and Rose Red in Seattle. Is there anything to that?
Hey, good questions, Wayne. I'd like to know the answer to that, too. What's your take on those, Barry?
Researchers I know from the East Coast did a retroactive investigation on the case because it had already ended. They couldn't confirm one data point in the book. Not one. Nothing. The evidence suggests, there was a big expose in the LA Times about the case in 1979, and it tore it to pieces. It sounds like the people involved, the Lutzes, sat down with Jay Anson, and they had a lot to smoke and a lot to drink, and they just generated a great story. I read the book when it came out. I wasn't impressed. I thought, floating pigs with glowing eyes? Give me a break. I wasn't impressed. I didn't think it was well written. It was kind of tawdry and cheap to me. And it didn't conform to anything I've ever read about.
What about the Rose Red?
I don't know enough about that to comment on it. So
okay. Thanks, Wayne. Appreciate that. Jerry in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Good morning.
Yes, sir. Honored to talk to you people. I was wondering, in the last hour, you talked about the poltergeist effect having something to do with some human beings having superior intelligence. Could you please explain that?
I think you misinterpreted what I said. What I said is that it seems that poltergeist agents, the individuals who are plagued with these psychokinetic manifestations that follow them, they're unique. They're the way they're wired, their nervous system, their neurochemical system may be very distinct and different from the average person, which makes them hypersensitive to the environment they're in. And either they generate or access this and put it to use. They're not superior. They're just different. Go ahead.
I had a poltergeist effect, or whatever you want to call it, in 1960. I was 10 and a half years old, and I was watching Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color. And it had just came on, and I went to the commercial, and I, of all things, my father had just filled the freezer with some drumsticks, the ice cream with the nuts on top. And I went into this room. We called it the spare room, and there was a lot of snow outside, as there is now here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And it made the light a little bit, made the room light up just a little bit, just, you know, a little bit of light. As the door closed behind me, this undulating cloud, like that's what I would call it, like it was energy, pure energy, came out of the ceiling, like maybe 2.5 feet long by maybe 1.5 feet wide. And a high-frequency pitch went through my head, and it was sort of a humming, like a, you know, and it froze my body totally. I was totally frozen, but I happened to be staring. I could see it, and it held me for maybe 25, 30 seconds. Then it let me go. The whole thing, it froze my body, you know, and then I spoiled. That was kind of weird, and I went to the freezer and got my drumstick, and went and ate it. 6 months later, the same thing happened to me again, but I woke up, and I was laying on a cot. We were fairly poor people, and I was next to a wall. I was laying next to a wall, and the same sound was going through my head, but this time it was longer, and it wouldn't let me go. But I couldn't see anything because I couldn't move. I was laying on my side next to the wall. And then it held me longer, and I was saying to myself in my mind, I was like, gee, I hope I'm not like this forever, because it held me longer. And then it let me go, and the sound went away, and it let me go. And then I never had that experience happen to me again. I don't know what to think about that, but I heard, I talked to Art Bell about maybe 10, 15 years ago, and
I'm curious, sir, what was your age at the time?
10 and a half.
Any in your family, any sleep disorders?
What do you mean by that?
Problems going to sleep, staying asleep.
Not at that time.
Neurological problems, seizure-prone, epileptic.
None of the above.
Okay.
My mother was somewhat, father also, but my mother was somewhat intuitive, quite intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
She was blind, but she could, I mean, mostly blind, but she could, she had a superior form of psychic ability, sort of like a superior intelligence as far as I was concerned. Everybody thought she was a little bit wacko, but no. Mother was very, very smart,
mm-hmm.
and very, very intuitive, very psychic, I think, mm-hmm. now that she's passed. She passed April 15th of 2009.
Yeah.
You know, what a wonderful lady. But
I mean, it sounds like you had a rather almost a, I guess you could almost put into a fugue state where something in that environment turn your body off temporarily. It sounds like some type of a seizure, or you're in an altered state and you can't do anything.
I think it. I didn't think about it until like maybe I was 18 or so when I was in the Army. Mm-hmm. I started thinking about things, you know, that happened earlier in my life, and I started thinking, you know, boy, you know. I can remember that when I was a kid. I never talked to anybody about it, never told anybody about it. But You know, somebody said it might be that sleep. What is it? There's something to do with sleep.
Sleep paralysis?
Yeah, there you go.
But usually you're asleep when they have.
This time I woke up. Yeah, one time I was awake. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. One time I was awake, and the other time I was sleeping but woke up to that sound.
Were you taking any medication at the time for any problem?
None whatsoever. None. Okay. Maybe an aspirin. Mother would give me an aspirin occasionally. Mm-hmm.
Did you have a special diet for any reason?
No. I'm a Lithuanian. I'm a Lithuanian descent, and we always ate real good food, hearty food.
Okay. So, Barry, you're crossing things off your list there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the next step would be to measure the environment and measure him and spend about 2 hours asking him a lot of questions, which we couldn't ask due to time restrictions.
Well, hey, Jerry, we appreciate you opening up on that. That's an interesting story. And maybe if we could get an email from you, I'll put you in contact with Barry and the two of you can continue this conversation. Thank you for that call. Thanks to all of our callers. I want to go back to one thing while we have like a minute left here. You mentioned about Amityville not having any really substantial support and an article in the L.A. Times that it tore to pieces. You've had experiences with the L.A. Times, though, right? And were not treated very well.
I used to think if the L.A. Times was superior to the Inquirer in terms of publishing, you know, the media, especially the Times, you know, they look very disdainfully upon parapsychology. I've been in the Times a few times, and it's never been good. I've never liked the way things turned out. They can't get their facts straight. They misrepresent information, and everything's got a negative or a ridicule factor to it. So at this point, I don't deal with them anymore because they can't get their facts straight. And the reason I believe they're so negative is they report the news. And unlike you that does factual reporting on events, you know, anomalous events, they in the news amplify, exaggerate, embellish the news to get ratings. And doing so, well, if the news isn't real because it's exaggerating it to get ratings, why should you believe anything anyone else says?
Well, that was my point, is that, you know, you said that they had ripped up the Amityville case. I'm not sure how much credibility to give them for that. Of course they would rip it up.
They did report it on the research. Dr. William Roll, some others from the East Coast, did some retroactive investigation. Qualified research people, academicians, they couldn't prove a thing. They were reporting on the work of these other parapsychologists. And, you know, allegedly, on his deathbed, Jay Anson admitted that they made the whole thing up. That's what I heard.
Dr. Barry Taff, author of the new book, Aliens Above, Ghosts Below, been an enjoyable experience. I would suggest that if people have cases that they'd like investigated, that they contact you, right?
Yes. I mean, we can't really do much outside of the L.A. area because the only funding we have is our own pocketbook.
All right. So, well, if people are in the L.A. area, send us an email. We'll forward it along. Thanks, Barry. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you as well for being with us tonight. Enjoy the weekend and what's left of it. I'll be back next month. Good night, everyone.